This Week in Free Energy.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. This is Sterling Allen, your host. You can join us every day at freeenergynews.com. And for those of you who are listening to us live, you can get the call-in numbers at freeenergynow.net, as well as information about John and upcoming, as well as past shows that we've had. We have John Searle on the line with us right now. John is in the UK, and he is a very famous, well-known inventor from way back. Back in the 60s, he had stuff flying around. He was powering his home with a device that he made. That's the story anyway, and there's witnesses to that story who have come forward that are going to be included in a documentary that will be coming up soon. Since that time, they have had a difficulty trying to replicate what they had. I was talking to T. Waltz earlier, who was down looking at the prototype that they have. Actually, it's not a prototype. It's a mock-up of a prototype, basically one of the components, a key demonstration of what this thing might look like. And he made the analogy of, you know, when you go driving down the road, it's like you find a house one day, and you go back later to try and find it. You don't have the map that you had that day, and you just can't find it. It's still there. The roads haven't moved. So, John, welcome to the show. Before I go talking too much, I really appreciate you joining us.
Oh, it's nice to talk to you.
And Terry, are you on also?
I'm here, yes, Sterling, yes.
Okay, we have Dr. Terry Moore, who's a friend and associate of John's. John, tell us about this technology. You had this thing going back in the 60s. How many of these things did you have running?
Well, with the SEG for domestic use, we had three of them. Two were issued out to two men that were very ill. And one was extended life by 10 years. The other one, I believe, is still living, as far as I know. My course has got confiscated, and I haven't been very well since.
So you've not been able to locate the other two?
No. The one, we understand, the chap died, but they don't know what happened to his property because he lived alone. And obviously the property was cleared out by the officials for the next people to move in. So we have no idea what happened to it.
So the one that you had on your house was confiscated, and
yes, unfortunately, the excuse was it did not comply to the rules and regulation of the electric board.
And that's why they put you in jail?
Yes. Well, actually, I was put in jail for protection from the electric board because they felt that had I been released, they would hound me to a point where I would do something serious to them. And they did not want that to happen.
And how long were you in jail?
9 months, but it was like a holiday. I was treated very well, highly respected, and shall we say, treated like if I was some outsider having a holiday.
So once you were out, you had a team that was working with you before. Were you not able to get back with them and replicate what you had before?
No, I think that affair frightened them off. And they decided it was best to keep away. So I had to form a new team that took ages to do.
And you had things flying around. Tell us about that.
Well, when I started off, it was for a generator for house use. Nobody told me that things do take off. I always understood that nothing takes off unless you fly some rocket force behind it. But they're wrong. things can take off. And this is what happened with the first experiment. I switched on. I had to use outside, like you see in this model, mock-up, outside source to trigger it. And then it because it was so small, it just lifted and went to the ceiling. And, of course, that was contrary to everything I've been taught. And from there, we added a bit more weight to it, and that was even worse. That actually was so powerful and slight in the ceiling, it just broke through it. So it's something that needed to be done outside until you understood what was happening. It took time. It took 6 years before I began to realize some of the things that was happening. And early on this mock-up, Morris has done, have I got the final bit of information from it, which now allows me to proceed with a patent.
Okay, now when you're talking about this device that Morris made, you're talking now about recent information. This is a mock-up that you have built. A gentleman in California, Morris,
yes,
is the last name, and he built a version of what you had 60 years earlier, but it's not power generating. It was just to basically detail certain aspects of the technology. Is that correct?
That's correct, because to write the patent up, we need to know some information we cannot get from the SEG. The SEG never stops, and that's the problem. We wanted some means to stop loose rollers running to find out what the actual idle current was, 0 to what. Now we got that information, so we now got all information for the purpose of writing the patent up.
Okay, now writing the patent up in terms of showing a key component to demonstrate an aspect of the patent, what about getting a working device?
I don't know if you had anyone go down to the workshop, but you should have seen that we have started remaking the SUG. More materials are waiting to come in.
We did have two people at least go down and look at that, and they each had people with them. And I guess there were about five or so altogether who were there today. And I have heard back from both of those people, and yes, they did see what was shown in the video that is online in conjunction with the story that we wrote, as well as I believe you may have a link from your website.
Yes. I'm hoping by June this year we have got that first ring, the proper ring and roller sets running off the SUG. So then there will be only two more ring setups to make to complete it.
Right. From what I understand, in the mock-up, there are certain components that are purposely left out. For example, there's in the place of what's to be the neodymium segment, there's just a piece of plastic, and basically this is where the neodymium goes.
Yes.
And so,
because we don't need it for this research we're doing.
Right. The purpose of this segment was not to build a functioning electric generator, but to, as you said, to find the idle current and to be able to stop
because,
and start.
Yes, that's correct. We never knew what that was. Now, of course, we know now that any magnetic roller concept, there will be a amount of voltage required before they'll move. And then after that, it will keep running. What we did not know was how much that current was before they move, because it's our rollers on the SEG runs at much higher voltage, therefore it can never stop.
Now, a question that I would like to ask you you know, you had stuff operational. You had your home running on this thing back in the 60s. And that's been a long time since between then and now. And you have written quite a few things. You've put in different, keys or secrets kind of hidden in different documents that you've written. But no one has, including yourself, has replicated what you had back in the 60s, though there have been several attempts. How clear would you say your memory is of what you had back in the 60s? Is it just a matter of money and people working and doing the right things, or is there maybe a little bit of haziness in your own memory and a struggle to try and recall what you had back then?
Well, first of all, nothing has been done for years because there'd been no money and there'd been no team. When the team came, they were getting all the money and doing things the way they wanted to do, not the way I instructed them. Now, the difference between Morris is that Morris is doing what he's been told, so he's winning. And this means that the SEG will now certainly reappear. But if people go off thinking they can do it cheaper and quicker, then they will never do it.
Now, you have a lot of the components necessary. Do you have all of the components necessary to rebuild this thing?
Already rotor set, the whole lot. Morris informs me he has in stock now. The material for the magnetic layer has been paid by man in England to China to do, and they said this was a very tricky job to do, but they will be prepared to do it for us. And a chap in Alaska confirmed yesterday he has purchased the copper needed for the three rings that we want, but the expected date originally was May for that to arrive, but I understand from Morris that he's notified him now that it may be in 2 weeks.
That's the group in Alaska maybe doing in 2 weeks what they were going to have ready in May?
Yes. Well, the thing is, it's not the question of the chap just buying this big sheet of copper. He has no means of cutting it. We don't have any means of cutting it. So he has to ship it to a firm who got a laser cutter, and they will cut the three rings out, what we say coarse raw material. They will be shipped tomorrow, and he will simply mill them down to the proper size.
Okay. So, again, to my question, do you have 100% of the materials, or what are you yet lacking if you don't have 100%?
No, we don't have 100%. The only 100% we got is for the rollers. All the rollers need it. For the three rings. What we're short of is the material for the three plates.
And the
that sum is already booked to come in.
Okay. So you are pulling these... Let's get back to my question. If I understand indirectly what you're asking, I asked, do you remember clearly what you had in the 60s, are you saying yes, you do?
Yes, yes.
So you remember fully, and it's just that you have not had the money or the team to accurately replicate per your instructions, and now you do have that with Morris.
Yes. If I had 12 men like Morris, SEGs would be in the shop within 12 months.
Okay, so now we've got Morris, and we've got materials. Unfortunately, Morris is not able to work on this full time because he's got to make a living.
That's why you've
got money for materials. You don't have money to pay him full time to work on this. So that's a bit of a logjam right now.
If I had the money, he could work full time. And I could be with him to speed it up.
So money is a logjam, not materials or people at this point.
No, it's money to get it moving. It's our problem. We have the gentleman here who is prepared to pay the cost of solicitor fees and the patent. He will pay all that for me.
Mm-hmm. How much are you talking about? How much money to get past that logjam of being able to pay more to be able to do this so he doesn't have to work on the side, so to speak?
I would say that at least for the moment, as a guess, that we would look at $5,000 to get that first effort completed so we can demonstrate it, put some lights on the cooker and that, just to show that it will run on and on and you don't have to worry about it.
Okay, did I hear correctly, 500,000 pounds?
Yes, yes.
To complete the unit is what you need. That's what I have in my story. And then from there, there'd be about 14 million to
get the production line running.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I think once they start to get in the shops, there will be other people come in and pay for lines to be set up to get more lines to run.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice if there was a few lines running in America producing them for your voltage requirements.
Right. Now, so the 14,000 would be for one type of output, say British. Wouldn't it be fairly straightforward to simply modify that for U.S. output, or is that going to be
required
separate line?
It's no problem. No problem whatsoever.
Okay. When you talk about one assembly line, what rate of production would that be?
Well, if everything goes as it looks, I think we're talking about something like perhaps one roller set popping out in every 2 minutes. And so we can say that at the end of a 24-hour shift, we would see something like probably 100 to 110 FEGs waiting for dispatch.
Per day?
Yes.
And that's the 14 kilowatt output?
Yes, yes. We've talked to power people, and they all say that the average person in the UK uses about only 4.5 kilowatts an hour. So what we were proposing is well above their needs.
And if I understand, so in the UK, a typical house might need 4.5 kilowatts. You're capable of generating 14 kilowatts max.
Yes.
And
so they can have a hot swimming pool outside.
Okay. And in the U.S., a typical home, a nice home might require 10 kilowatts. So 14 kilowatt would be adequate in the U.S. as well.
Yes.
Now let me ask you, or let me just make the point that brought up in our interview the other day. Your device is able to respond instantaneous to whatever the home requirement is at the time. If you're asleep at night and you're only maybe needing 0.2 kilowatts to run a clock on your computer or on your television as opposed to during the day, or maybe you wake up in the morning and everything turns on, you've got your alarm clock and now you're starting to take showers and whatnot, this will respond instantaneous to whatever the power demand is, so you would not need to be hooked into the grid, is that correct?
Now, the thing is, what happens here, the velocity depends on the flow of current. So when the current increases, they automatically are forced to rotate faster.
But it does take time to make material move faster. You've got
it's too fast for your eyes to see.
Say that again?
It's too fast for your eyes to notice.
Yeah, but what about the device? Devices are a little more temperamental than what our eyes might be able to detect. you turn on a computer, it's pulling current. It needs what it requires.
What we've got to bear in mind is that when the roller discharges its load to the circuit, as it arrives at the next point, it is fully loaded, ready to discharge again. Mm-hmm. When the current starts to move a bit faster, they just speed up.
Back in the 60s, when you were running your home on this thing, you had devices plugged into your home that maybe were not as sophisticated as what we've had now in the, you know, in the 2006.
Oh, no.
Do you think that our modern appliances would be just happy with what this would be able to accomplish?
Let's put it this way. Your computers and television recorders wouldn't suffer from spikes on the mains. It would be absolutely smooth.
And what did you have back in the 60s that would be nominally comparable to what we have nowadays?
Well, because we had a heavy cooker, washing machine, spin dryers, and of course I had all my heavy equipment running on it. If you've seen some of the old photographs or movies, you'll see that there were very heavy powered test equipment. Today, test equipment is a lot lighter in the energy.
Okay. Now, let's talk for a second about the anti-gravity. This is something that you're going to be postponing and pursuing. First, you're going to get the generator aspect, and you're actually going to be shunting the generator to keep it from going into the over-unit or into the gravitational mode.
That's correct.
But at some point, so the same device that is powering your home today, would you be able to modify it to go into gravitational mode tomorrow?
Yes, we are. I've been asked to rethink about redoing the flying side. And I'm already looking at the complicated part, what's called a flight cell. And I expect to have some technical drawings produced very shortly from Sweden, who I've asked them to look into all the latest technology and to run up the flight cell. They know the flight cell from the past, to let me have what the new ideas of equipment for such a device would be.
When you were doing anti-gravity before things were stopped back in the 60s, did you have anything functional? Were you able to drive around on craft, or were you still deep into research and development?
Well, first of all, the crafts actually will need a pressure vessel inside, just like any satellite has. Unfortunately, we couldn't afford to do that, so everything was unmanned. I did, for the sake of the press, sometimes got inside the cabin so they could have a picture of me inside the cabin.
But you never actually flew it?
No, not inside. It flies radio control, but not for carrying human beings.
Okay. What kind of time frame are we talking about you know, we're looking at June, July to have the first SEG fully replicated and operational of this year. How long would it take to, if we had the money, and the money would obviously come if you have a prototype that is putting out energy with no input, is pure output, no pollution, there would, of course, be need, the government would be, need to be happy that this is not putting out, it's not going to be putting out harmful rays that's going to be damaging people. So that testing is going to take some time. How long before we have these devices cranking from the assembly line if you had your 14 million pounds?
Well, I would safely say, based on past experience and the way Morris is progressing, that we would get the production line up and running by December this year, if that money was actually there to do it.
So,
and we probably get two or three running the following year.
December of
2008? Now, this year was the first one, if the money was actually there.
Mm-hmm. Now,
then, the following year, I would anticipate there would be a massive increase in getting funding to get more production lines running.
Mm-hmm.
Then the car generator would be a next step up for cars, and that could be at the end of 2008-2009.
End of 2008 into 2009 to have something that would be able to run an automobile to put out enough electricity.
And it would run at the same speed as any car runs today.
Mm-hmm. What about other applications such as locomotives or airplanes?
Yes, trains. I have tried hard to get the European trains to take up the idea. But I think the problem is they've just invested so much money on electrification that to just get rid of it and replace it with this generator is asking them a bit too much.
If I could maybe get into a past situation, I'm aware that there was a group in the U.S. That maybe for 10 years was working with you, but that didn't go anywhere. Could you maybe elaborate on that one?
I thought I could quite hear what you said.
I was. I understand there was a group in the U.S. that was working with you for about 10 years, but that was not able to go anywhere. Could you maybe elaborate on what happened there, why that didn't happen, didn't materialize?
Well, there have been a number of groups come together, but then the terms became, what we say, a little bit unfair, where they wanted to be, some member wanted to be the boss and own everything. I came to California and met a gentleman who signed up a deal. When the contract came, it said, the first one is yours and all the rest is mine. And they said, who on earth would agree to that?
Mm-hmm.
But we had another group. I must admit, the Sherwoods in New York did an immense amount of help in those early days, and their efforts helped us to race ahead like we did in the 60s, and which I was very grateful for. But, of course, they were getting older, and they found the workload a bit heavy. So, in the end, they had to sort of say it was too much, and we had to find somebody else.
How many witnesses from the 1960s, when you had your home running on this and there was a couple of other devices you mentioned, how many people that were involved with you at that time are around today as witnesses? I understand there was at least one that's going to be on this documentary that's going to be coming forward. How many do you know of that are still around with us today?
Well, I would say I know some have died. Somebody just died early this year. There may be still about 7 remaining of the 13 of the group that existed. In the earlier, when I actually started off with 13 old age pensioners, there might still be a couple in the rest home somewhere, still living, but the rest would be dead now. They're already old when they helped me.
Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't talked much in this segment about how this thing actually works. Let's get into that for a few minutes, if we could.
Well, first of all, you need a very large collection of electrons for a kickstart, and you have to turn to the rare earth to obtain that. Now, every material has a frequency, a natural frequency. If we lay the materials up in such a manner that the frequencies can match up, then you get electrons moving across like a diode from the inside reservoir, as I call it, the rare earth, which holds the mass of electrons, will start moving through. If we have a magnetic object running around on the surface, it tends to pull the electrons to that area. So it's a very simple thing. One should say it's a diode in its action. I always refer to an autotransformer. And it certainly is a linear motor. And it certainly rides on the magnetic bearing.
You have a website where you have articulated to a certain extent how this works. Let's go ahead and give the name of that website.
It's www.cirrosolution.com.
This site
will be updating you.
That's SEARLSolution.com.
Yes.
And then you also have a corporate website. What's that one?
That is the Searle Effect.
SearleEffect.com?
.com.
And then isn't there also like the Searle, there's an abbreviation for the company name, like I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's the Searle Effect. That's the SISRC, which should not be out there, because it's my copyright.
Okay, well, I went there the other day. Shouldn't you have a password on it if people aren't supposed to be getting to it?
Well, I don't know myself, because I don't touch it. I have notified the company records office that they are using my copyrights without my permission.
Mm-hmm. So where can a person go to get what is available publicly? That's the SearleSolution.com?
Yes, that's the one that will keep you right up to date as we progress.
Mm-hmm. And we've got...
And there will be quite a lot of information eventually appearing.
Uh-huh. You have membership available there, so if somebody puts down $50 to become a member, they have access to additional information.
I don't know how Don operates there, because my job, I put the stuff down, and he'll put it on the screen, but he obviously got to make a bit of charge towards the cost of running the site for me. But I think the $50 does give you full access of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had this design since the 60s and have obviously run into a lot of people. And I understand that you have some improvement in your own understanding about how you might want to do this. How much has your design been influenced by engineers and others that you have run into over the years?
When we meet engineers, we often discuss ideas, materials, and what they think is the best material. For instance, I went to the Aluminium Federation with a model to show them the problems I was seeking, what materials to use. And I find them very interested in what I'm trying to do, and they give me all the information I need.
Now, obviously, you've been around for a long time, and we hope you'll be with us for years to come, but obviously there is a ticking clock on anyone, and you included. You have made provisions for when you pass from us that this technology will continue?
Well, my doctor's very concerned about this. Yes, He is doing all, paying for all the, all the legal stuff and the patent to make sure it's there, so that Morris and those working with us at that time can continue with the work. He also hopes that I'll get a lot of laboratory, because he knows I have a lot of ideas I want to develop.
One of the people I know has, I guess there's been some speculation as well as talk, I should say, that while you were in prison, maybe there was some messing with your ability to remember these things. Is there any substance to that?
Sorry, I've got a job to hear. The line isn't too good.
Okay, let me repeat my question, maybe in alternate wording. There's some speculation that while you were in prison and there were the authorities had access to you, that maybe there was some messing with your ability to remember. Maybe they affected your brain, or they tinkered around with you. Is there any substance to that?
No, I don't think so. All I know is that everything got destroyed. Some of the stories I've heard is that official people came, lorries, loads of stuff was taken. The American who called wrote me to say that he found them burning my stuff, the big bonfires running. Did I give them permission to burn it? I said, no, you must be wrong. You must got the wrong place. Then I had another chap from Wokingham wrote me. They said, I went to your house and they're burning all your papers and photos and films. Did you tell them to do so? And I said, no. Of course, when I came out, the house was cleared. And of course, I also heard that somebody suggested he was in the armed forces in Berlin area, and he was involved in removing some of the property from my house for the American government. But I wouldn't accept that as possible.
Mm-hmm. Bottom line is, when you emerged from prison, you were starting with a clean slate. You didn't have anything, any papers, any documentation, and you had to start all over again, correct?
Yeah. All I had was just the clothes I was wearing and a pair of prison slippers on my feet. That's all I had.
In terms of reproducing blueprints once you emerged from prison, how much of that have you been able to do?
Of course, for years I couldn't do nothing. I had no money, no proper place to live, and so it was a struggle. It wasn't until about 2 years that the chap searching for me found me. And he came and offered £2,000 from his bank account for me to get back to this work. And he found me a place in London. So he found me the place in London, helped me to move here. And I tried to get the ball moving again. And it was hard work.
You say, how long ago was that, that happened?
That was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
and then you've had various people who tried to work with you, but they didn't follow instructions or they had unfavorable terms, and it wasn't until you met Morris that things really are moving in the way that you like.
Yeah, the thing is that it seems to me that after people start working with you, then for some reason they begin to realize the value that was involved and want to take ownership of everything. This is always a trouble. Morris is the first man who has no interest whatsoever of ownership. He just wants to be part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I ask people, to be part of a team. It's, let's put it this way. The day is there. Nobody owns it, but everyone can use it. The SEG is the same. It's there. Nobody owns it, but everyone can use it, and it becomes available.
the engineer that I spoke with who met with Morse today was very impressed with how fastidious he is in the details of getting things accurate to a high level of tolerance, perhaps even more than is necessary. He's a very accurate and painstaking engineer in his working. It was his comment.
I'm awfully sorry, but I do have a job to catch what you're saying.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me repeat that. The engineer that went and saw Morse today, this morning, that I know, he said that Morse is a very accurate engineer and that he is very careful about his how he builds things and how he replicates to a high degree of tolerance, to a very precise level.
Yes. All this work, I'm afraid you do have to have it absolutely precise for every fraction you out by, you're losing energy. And we cannot afford to lose the energy. So I'm afraid it's a terrific piece of engineering work. I hope whoever went down to see the site saw how accurate you have to get this material.
Mm-hmm.
Because the trouble with the old days, we sintered the mixtures. And we believe, or at least Sussex University engineers believe, that the key was at the junctions of the materials. They must play a vital part. But because sintering is such a slow job to do the SEG, it would put the cost up. And I decided that maybe the solution would be to press the layers in rings and then push them together to see if we could make that work. And at the moment, everything looks very good. I have every confidence we are going to be able to produce the SEG by this method, which means that we'll be able to bang them out a lot quicker, a lot faster, and therefore they'll be cheaper to buy.
And what kind of price point are you looking at when you build one of these 15 kilowatt units and put it out?
When you start off, it's always expensive because you've got to get the machinery and that in. And we rather think that for the first few months, the first machines would have to be about £16,000. But bear in mind, once you've got it, it's costing you nothing. You've got a cleaner room, cleaner air, better oxygen in it, and therefore you are benefiting immediately health-wise. So you've got a lot of benefits from this machine. And next year, your electric bills no longer have to be paid. There's no bills to pay. You can buy other things you want. And so you have to look at the cost over a long period, that it is a very cheap machine to have. As production increases and we start putting out thousands of them per week, then of course the price will come down because you're buying many more tons of material. And the more tons you buy, the cheaper it is.
And at what point, what price point, once the production increases, let's say 5 years from now, how much do you think it will be costing?
I would say, to be honest, we could probably get them down to £1,000 each.
£1,000, British
unit.
Sterling, for one 15 kilowatt unit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about flying to the moon for a second. You're hoping that before you leave us, you'll be able to get back into the anti-gravity applications and you can get to the moon in an hour?
But let's put it this way. If we can get the SEGs running out in an order that will bring in the money then I would reconsider going back to the research and development of the Liberty Disc, as it's called, now called the IGV. I would think that we would need 5 years of hard work to get a craft built that could take people for trips to the moon and around the moon and back. I'd like to point out that the time factor, it's because we're operating in a complete different environment. You climb out the air, you allow yourself 20 minutes to take it steady so you don't disturb the air too much. Once you free the air, you set your course, you take the energy off the top shell that's been holding you back so that you now streak forward. After 2 seconds, you put the energy back on and you now cruise at that speed, and you should be in orbit around the moon within 50 minutes from that time.
And what about getting to Mars?
Mars, wherever Mars is, we can set the course to run for 2 months. So we can guarantee that we'll be there in 2 months. We'll be at the point where Mars will meet us, no matter where it is. We go straight there. We don't have to do like rocketry, slingshot, and you've got to wait for a window to do it. We don't have any of that nonsense with the IGV. You plot your course and you just go straight. And you're at the point the planet will meet within seconds of that time.
Let's talk about your feelings about the planet and where we're at as a species, and what we're doing to the planet and why you're involved in this.
Regarding the Earth. Regarding the Earth?
Mm-hmm. Your feelings about what we're doing is in terms of pollution and what this technology could do to solve that.
Well, I've hammered the president for years now and our prime ministers that we must get down to get these rivers dug out and cleaned. We need as many trees planted. We need to get the SG into operation wherever we can. And if we do this, we have a chance not only to improve our lifestyle, but our health as well. And not only our health, but to give the environment on the whole a better chance of recovering. Trees, plants, animals. If we continue the way we're going, well, we're just making the world for viruses and bacteria that will just take over.
In addition to being non-polluting, are there actually health benefits to this technology?
But if you are in a negative atmosphere, you benefit in many ways. First thing, your brain is more happier. It's not too greatly stressed. And secondly, is healing is quicker if you damage your flesh. I know because I've been in an explosion, and I healed pretty quick in the influence of the generator. So we know it's a great benefit in the home, especially for wives who scold themselves while they're cooking. It's a quick relief to the pain, and it's quick healing. So it has big advantages.
So it's not a health-neutral technology. It's actually health-beneficial technology. In other words, it actually has health, or it has healing properties?
Oh, yes. It is because we have changed the condition around us. All this electric we use is tending to make the room a bit on the positive side, which is not good for us. If we can make it more negative, we feel a lot better. We would not lose our temper, patience, because we are charging the body up. At the moment, we're losing energy from the body by the environment we're in.
How scalable is this? How small could you make it? Could you put one for a cell phone, for example?
At the moment, because our job is finding out how everything is properly functioning. we could then bring it down to a much smaller scale, working out the best way to do it. This is why my doctor would like me to have a laboratory, because then I would have the tools in which I can do the investigation, and I'm certain that we could get the SEG technology down to par, small devices, medical devices, things which could be slipped in your pocket.
Now we're getting near the end of the hour. Is there something, an area that we've not covered yet?
Well, of course, there are lots of points. People are concerned about the energy these mobile phone masks use. Of course, the SEG small package would run that. Then also all your street lights could run from them. The thing I've always been pushing by trains could make a lot of electricity. And if they were set up with SEGs, they could run off, but every wheel could generate power and pass back along the track to feed the stations. So we're not using the energy that's been wasted. If we only use that energy, we could be better off. Every car that runs, only 30% of the energy at the wheel is actually used. The rest of it's wasted. Why? Why are we not using that as electricity to run the car once the wheels start? Then you charge up the battery just to kick-start you off when you start from the lights, so that the wheels then supply you the energy to run.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the different applications of the SEG, where you could be replacing what is now wasted energy by applying the SEG. Am I catching you correctly?
Yes. You see, we do waste a terrible amount of energy. And now at the moment, we accept it. We all believe there's nothing we can do about it. But there is a lot we can do about it. We just think and then act. And we can create. I don't like seeing the amount of waste going on that doesn't help the planet at all. And it doesn't help us as a family, because we're losing out with the hard-earned money.
Well, John, I really appreciate you joining us today. This has been a fascinating interview, and I certainly wish you the best in being able to bring this technology forward at long last after all these years. And we wish you the best, you working with Morse and whoever else may be able to make this happen. Again, this has been John Searle, Professor John Searle, who's been talking with us. The website is searlesolutions.com, singular or plural, .com. Is that correct?
Right. And I hope when that ring and roll is running, that you'll find time for me to come along to the studio and let you see it operating.
Well, we would all love that. Thank you for joining us. This has been Free Energy Now with Sterling Allen, your host. You can join us every day at freeenergynews.com. We do have a story about the Searle breakthrough recently in getting this mock-up for preparing for their first prototype in June or July-ish. That's at PESN.com. Thank you very much.